Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, teach you, put in context. Call me, 1-800-743-CNBC, or tweet me at Jim Cramer. When the global economy is slowing, what do? It's easy. If you're a portfolio manager, you know exactly what you do. You go buy the cloud stocks.
Buy.
You pick up some software as a service companies, and then you sell everything else. This was a good day for the averages, with the Dow gaining 174 points, S&P advancing 0.73%, NASDAQ climbing 1.13%. But it was the surging cloud stocks that led the market higher. A move like this doesn't start with people waking up this morning and saying, you know what? I feel like buying some growth today. It starts when money managers are stuck by the lack of worldwide growth, and they default to growth. In this case, the culprit is the coronavirus outbreak, which has slammed the brakes on China, the most important growth economy on Earth. President Trump has worked hard to get American companies to stop sourcing their products from China, and he's had some success. Nevertheless, we still rely on China for all sorts of goods, from rare earth minerals, medicines, to things like buttons, trim, for clothing. The Chinese have spent the last 40 years taking share in manufacturing, or some people say wiping out our manufacturing. So now that huge chunks of People's Republic are in lockdown, I think there are going to be some real shortages. More important, China is Europe's largest trading partner. Tons of European exports end up in the Chinese market. And suddenly, that's a big vulnerability. While China's growth has been slowing for years, it was slowing very gradually. They had 6.1% GDP growth last year, which is the kind of number that developed countries would kill for. With the coronavirus, China's GDP growth is about to hit a wall. As many of their factories are still offline after extended post-Chinese New Year vacation. Most companies that import from China tend to take down a lot of inventory ahead of their New Year so they don't run out of stuff. And that's why I don't expect them to be hurt immediately. We won't know how bad things are for maybe another week or two, or maybe not until the month of March. But I do think we'll have real sourcing problems, and that could drive up prices if this pandemic hasn't stopped. The next clue to buy ultra growth? Oil. The price of crude is very sensitive to worldwide demand, especially Chinese demand. If China's economy grinds to a halt, you'd expect oil to be down. And sure enough, there's West Texas crude plunging below $50 a barrel. Plus, the longer-term demand for oil, often driven, by the way, by airlines locking in prices, that is slacking too. Now, most money managers don't spend as much time talking to industrialists and retailers and oil people as I do. But they don't have to. You know why? Because these money managers can take their cue from the bond market. And when they look at the bond market, the relentless decline in interest rates tells them they need to worry about a slowdown. And that's why they're switching to stocks that can put up terrific numbers, even in a weaker worldwide economy. How do we find them? Well, at this point, we've just gotten through the bulk of earnings season, so portfolio managers can take stock of the fastest growth trends that they saw during earnings season. Incredibly, you know what? There's only one theme that's resonating. One! and that's the cloud. Okay, makes sense. The software as a service companies had a bountiful quarter, and this is a uniquely American industry, very little, if almost no exposure to China. They are born in the USA, although it's hard to imagine Bruce Springsteen crooning about them anytime soon. What makes this group so enticing? First, we actually saw an acceleration in the cloud this quarter. Not many companies saw an acceleration in their revenues. Now, initially, I didn't believe it. So when Microsoft reported an incredibly strong number for Azure, their cloud division, it was an acceleration to 62%. Many hedge funds, well, they figured they were simply taking share from Amazon Web Services, which is number one. Nope, not at all. Amazon Web Services blew away Wall Street's estimates, too, and their margins expanded, even if their growth slowed slightly. But that was really the law of large numbers speaking. You don't see margin expansion when there's fierce competition, though. And that's why Amazon stock has caught fire since they reported. Have you seen that stock? I mean, honestly, since they reported, have you seen it? Now, I know the output quarter was greeted like a bomb went off, but it turns out their Google Cloud business generated some excellent numbers. That's why the stocks come all the way back. Opco published a terrific piece, where they estimate that Google Cloud grew at a 67% clip last year, faster than Azure, making it the fastest growing of the big three cloud infrastructure providers. New leadership in the form of an old Oracle star, the dazzling Thomas Kurian, has brought in a huge number of $50 million deals, doubling year over year. That's impressive. Opco points out that Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet aren't really competing on price because they each have different strengths. Amazon's competing with depth of product, Microsoft with hybrid, Google with artificial intelligence and machine learning. In fact, what they're really competing on is capacity because the demand for data centers keeps exceeding the supply. And that's why portfolio managers bid up the two companies that make the nuts and bolts of the data center, AMD and NVIDIA. Now, remember how AMD's quarter was supposedly disappointing? I told you to buy it. Well, guess what? Now the stock's above where it was trading before it reported the so-called bad quarter. As for NVIDIA, what can I say? They report this week and their whole product line is in strong demand. Now, when it comes to the cloud and AMD, NVIDIA, well, those two are vicious competitors. But with this kind of demand, who cares? There's enough business to go around. Meanwhile, the cloud theme is so strong that it's totally overshadowed Amazon's retail business, Alphabet search business, and Microsoft's Windows business. Now, you might think that's the tail wagging the dog, but you'd be wrong. I think it's the future dog wagging the past tail, because eventually these legacy businesses will be eclipsed by cloud infrastructure and all three titans. Who else wins? When we think of the cloud, we think of software as a service. That means we think of ServiceNow. Oh, man, did you see that? That's Bill McDermott's company. Adobe, Shantanu Narayen. I mean, it's on Workday. Anil Bushri, VMware. We always have Sanjay Poonen on. Twilio, okay, not that great a quarter, but the stock's going back up. Splunk, Salesforce, our cloud kings. Not to mention the cloud princesses. There's Coupa, HubSpot, Kramer family fave Okta, and Atlassian, symbol team. Our only dud from that group was New Relic, which has experienced a meaningful slowdown. So I'm stripping New Relic out of its princely title and handing it over to Alteryx. Yeah, one of our favorites is taking share from Microsoft Excel. AYX. That's don't look at that stock, it'll blind your eyes. Of course, we don't know how long this newfound love will last. If China managed to contain the coronavirus, you can expect money to rotate right back out of these names and into more cyclical stocks, including the semiconductor names with major China exposure that have been bombs today. We could also see some weakness if the investment banks start pumping out more cloud stocks. There are always more waiting in the wings, but we got some good news there. I think the stink of Casper, the unfriendly IPO, down almost $2 from where it, down $2 from where it came public last week, could keep a lid on new deals for the moment. Even if I know that's a mattress company. By the way, that's been a terrible industry. You know what's not very firm? Mattress firm. The bottom line, sometimes stocks fit a theme so perfectly that they can ignite the averages without any other companies really doing anything at all. And that's what happened today. If you own them, don't get too greedy. You might want to ring the register a wee bit. But you definitely got to hold on to something. I want to go to Marvin in New York. Marvin!
Yeah, good evening, Jim. I've been watching the show for about 10 years. My question is on CBS Viacom. To me, it seems like it's very undervalued. I mean, could they earn $7.76 and the right. PE, and the PE is $4.04, and the PE is $4.47, and they pay a dividend of $2.77, and the market cap is $21 billion. Netflix is going to spend $18 billion on content. Aren't they better off just buying
Marvin, I've got to tell you, I made that argument. I talk a lot about my winners in Action Alerts, and we happen to own Microsoft, we happen to own Amazon, we happen to own Alphabet. One of my biggest losers is Viacom, and I'm proud of that. I want to describe what I said last week on my conference call. It gets me so angry. I screwed up on this. I believed in the company. It is too cheap to sell. It sells at the lowest multiple of any stock I follow in the S&P 500. But I was wrong. I got it wrong. I believed that I'm wrong. And that's wrong, wrong, wrong. Not early. Wrong. So I've got to tell you, all the things you said are true. It's what drew me to it. But I am wearing the Viacom Post-it. And if we had gaffer tape, I'd put it on right now. V-I-A-C, right here. I got a lot of real estate there. Ren in Missouri. Ren.
Hey, Jim. Happy Medicare age birthday.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, hey, I mean,
Part
good to
B is different from Part D. I've been working on that. They got, where's Part C? And I guess I get A, and I give up my good. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's a mixed blessing, this Medicare. I'm working on it, though. What's up?
It's good to see you got your sleeves rolled up, ready to go to work for the little guy.
Thank you, man.
I'm calling about a security that should not be affected by the coronavirus. Their last report beat earnings and sales estimates. They also continuously raise their dividend, but the stock has been on a tear lately. Market excess, MKTX. What do you think?
Well, as my friend Michael Haley would say, winner, winner, chicken dinner. You want to own that stock, believe me. I think it is definitely a winner. All right, the cloud stocks are winning, but don't be greedy. If you own some, you may want to ring the register on part. Not all, but part of your position. But please hold on to something. There. Now, does that tell you the truth about Viacom? My crack staff knows exactly how to make me look good. On Mad Money Tonight, does Take-Two Interactive still have game in this market? I'm sitting down with the CEO after earnings to see what's ahead for the company. And Uber's on the road to profitability. So could this be your ticket to ride? I'm eyeing the company at this recent rally. And what should your next move be when it comes to the fossil fuels in this market? I'm giving my take. You know what? You're never too old to eat your word. Okay, we're very well.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, what in the world just happened to the stock of Take-Two Interactive Software? One of my favorite names in the video game space for years. You know them as Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead Redemption 2, all the 2K sports titles, Borderlands 3, The Outer Worlds. Take-Two has some amazing franchises. Yet last Thursday night, the company reported what was widely viewed as a disappointing quarter, which sent the stock plunging nearly 12% on Friday. Even though they delivered a top and bottom line beat with solid full-year guidance, okay, there were a couple of negatives. Take-Two's net bookings came in ever so slightly weaker than expected, thanks to soft performance from NBA 2K and WWE 2K, which, by the way, they called out. Because this is an amazingly transparent company. They called out. Still, management wasn't able to give us enough color about the coming year to get investors excited about the future. For that, I can't blame them. So is this a buying opportunity with the stock down from 127 to 111, or do we need to be more cautious? Let's check in with Strauss Zelnick, the chairman and CEO of Take-Two Interactive Software, get a better read on the quarter and where his company's headed. Mr. Zelnick, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Strauss.
Jim,
thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first, I've got to congratulate you, and I don't mean to be backhanded or anything, but a lot of companies, they'll tell you that they didn't miss anything, and they did. I'm listening to the conference call. You were the one who told me, wait a second, we're up to snuff, we're not happy with ourselves. So can you improve it?
I think we can. You know, I think that there is a lot of good news in the quarter. It's mostly good news in the quarter. And after all, we guided up twice during the year, and we landed right in the middle of our guidance. So I think the market's gotten very used to us beating consensus, beating guidance, and here we're right in the middle. Most of the news is great, and one of the things that was actually lost is Grand Theft Auto Online is now expected to have another record year, more than 6 years after its initial release. Borderlands 3 has sold in 8 million units. NBA 2K is pacing ahead of NBA 2K19 last year in terms of units sold. Red Dead Redemption 2 has sold 29 million units. Grand Theft Auto 5 is now up to 120 million units. So let's talk about the softness.
Okay.
There are two...
Take it head
two,
on, because that's two, what people did talk
right,
about.
So two spots that where we think we can do better. The first is... People are very accustomed to only great news coming out of the NBA 2K
yes.
franchise. And we said we don't expect to set a record this year. We expect to do great, but not set a record.
Right.
Why? We made changes in the in-game economy, which meant the recurrent consumer spending
right.
won't be quite as high as we expected. We still have great engagement. In fact, the My Team mode is up 35% in engagement, mm-hmm. and it's an immensely profitable title. We won't expect to set a record. The bleak spot, albeit rather small for our business, was WWE 2K20, right. where we really missed on quality, and we therefore missed on sales.
But Strauss, I've got to tell you, I was on the WWE conference call for the actual company, and they fired a guy who has been on the show. I thought was a pretty good guy. I got the sense that there's something very negative going on in the company right now. Can that impact you?
We have to take responsibility for what we do. The
okay.
truth is, it's a great brand. It's growing where it should be growing. We have a great relationship with them. Our game was not up to measure. It was not good enough.
But you
and
never
they
released
gave us all
games
the
that are not up to measure. That's one of the things you pride yourself on.
Yes, and in fact, the most disappointing thing is we made a decision, and therefore I made the decision to bring the development in-house, and everyone expected higher quality this year, and our scores were actually down. So we have more work to do.
All right. Now, there was a departure, and it happened to have started in the spring. We didn't know it was Dan Houser. Now, a lot of people, this is Rockstar, a lot of people love this man and think he is the creative genius behind Grand Theft. You made the point that his brother's still there, but you did not answer the question about whether he was the creative genius.
So, well, first of all, we're so blessed. We have so many creative geniuses.
Okay.
And as you know, we always describe a team. Sam Houser founded Rockstar Games
right.
over 20 years ago. He's been with the company ever since. He's president of the label. Dan was vice president of creative, and he's been on an extended leave since last spring, and he's decided to move on, and we wish him well.
Okay.
And we really value his contributions. There are more than 2,000 members of the Rockstar team.
Okay, that's
and
important.
So we really believe it's a team sport, and Sam Houser is a great player coach.
All right.
And the results are incredible now. Being able to say, look, we're going to set another record for Grand Theft Auto Online this year.
All right, now let's talk about some of the things that can really go right. We're close to Jensen Huang. When Jensen Huang wishes you happy birthday, you're kind of like, holy cow. Not that anybody else if they wishes it. But he showed me ray tracing. He showed me what they have. There's no difference between an actual movie, which is the world you're from, and this world that you're also from, which is video games. Now, you're able to assess this. Is this not the quantum leap that we've all been waiting for?
I think you're going to see with the new console generation coming out from both Microsoft right. and Sony in the next holiday season, it is a big leap forward that is due to all different kinds of technological advances, not just ray tracing.
Right.
And I think we're going to have an even bigger and broader and better canvas on which to paint.
Do you think it's going to be like 4G to 5G, that kind of thing?
Always hard to say. After all, right. We don't even know what the real right. expression of 5G is either.
True.
I do think it's going to be a big step forward, and our developers are very excited about what they can bring to the screen.
All right. Now, let me kind of oddball. There's a new, of course, unfortunate stay-at-home move. China could come here, unfortunately, because of Corona. Plays to Take-Two's hands, doesn't it? I know you don't want to. I know. I waffled on asking you that because I know it puts you in an awkward position. But let's put it this way. How about this? Anything that causes more people to stay at home is good for Take-Two.
Well, I'll probably let you say those words. My own view is, you know, we would never want to benefit in any way from someone else's discomfort or tragedy.
But you see why I had to ask, because
it's actually hard to know. You know, when I was in the movie business, if we had a bad opening, people would say it was a weather. And if we had a good opening, they would not claim it was the weather. So I'm not sure, actually.
Okay, how about this? Let's do a different one. Oscars were down 20% this year. Good for Take-Two.
Well, in fact, yes. I mean, we're in the fastest growing business in the entertainment industry, right. And we expect that to continue. Now, as we just said, I've said this before on good days. On less good days, right. I'll also say it. We have to execute. We mostly executed in this past quarter. Not across the board. We have more to do.
I've followed you for years, and if you say that you're not happy with your performance, that's when you buy the stock, because you don't find that kind of underperformance acceptable.
No, I certainly don't.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much, Strauss.
Thanks.
That's Strauss Zelnick. He's chairman and CEO of Take-Two Interactive. You've only had a couple of breakdowns in the stock. Every one of them has been followed by a breakout quarter. Man, money's back after the break.
Thanks, Jeff.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Next time you start worrying that a company can't change its stripes, just look at Uber. When this thing came public last spring, management seemed unconcerned with profitability. Their game plan was to keep losing money in order to take market share. But fast-growing companies with no earnings swiftly fell out of favor on the Wall Street fashion show, and Uber stock spent the summer getting hammered. That's when management did something remarkable. They changed course. They've done it in record time. Suddenly, Uber cares about profitability. In fact, they expect to turn a profit literally by the end of the year. And that's why the stock surged 9.5% on Friday. What a move. I went positive on Uber in late November, okay? Why? Well, it was still back at 29. I don't have 40. I think it's got more room to run. But let me tell you why I turned positive, because the company sure made it easy on me. First, the turn has been in the works for a while now. In last week's fantastic results, we learned that the turn is working even better than we expected. CEO Dara Khosrowshahi has gotten aggressive about exiting markets where the company's losing too much money. That's what we learned. In December, he put Uber Eats' India business up for sale. I wish he'd sell the whole darn thing, because online food delivery is a tough industry. Last month, we learned that he'd sold it to Zomato, one of the largest food apps in India. This is structured a lot like Uber's past deals, where they sell their far-flung operations in exchange for a stake in the combined entity. When they sold their Chinese business to Didi Shushin in 2016, they got a 20% stake in Didi, which is China's ride-sharing kingpin. When they sold their Southeast Asian business to Grab in 2018, they got a 27.5 stake. Basically, Uber keeps dropping money, losing businesses, and exchanging them for ownership stakes in market leaders. By the way, leaders that they have a hand in creating because they move out of the market. When you take a step back and look at all these moves as a whole, Uber suddenly just, you know, but also steadily, become a more domestically focused business with a portfolio of international holdings that feels a lot like some others that we like. Well, one that we like, ISC Interactive, or SoftBank, which we don't like now, but did like a one time. In the long run, I think these overseas bets could be huge winners, like when Yahoo took a small stake in Alibaba. And then remember how that ended up? Wow. More importantly, though, in the short term, they're paring back expensive money losers to focus on profitability. Meanwhile, it doesn't hurt that there were hearing rumors of consolidation in the domestic food delivery space. Uber Eats has been a black hole for these guys, but it might be a lot more valuable to say Grubhub merges with DoorDash. That's natural competitors. Of course, Grubhub's denied the possibility. They did it again last week. But these stories gave Uber stock a major boost. Now, so going into the quarter last week, there had already been meaningful improvement. We just didn't know how meaningful. When Uber reported on Thursday night, the company did, you know what it did? It really did. I hate to use this overused cliche, but it did shoot the lights out. They delivered a nice top and bottom line beat, revenue up 37% year over year, a market acceleration from the previous quarter, along with smaller than expected loss. Gross bookings increased by 28%. Margins improved dramatically. You know how much that means to us? It means like the competition is probably dropping a little bit. It's getting less competitive. Monthly average platform consumers, meaning users, they were up 22%. Even better. On the conference call, Dara Khosrowshahi told us exactly what we wanted to hear. First, the ride-sharing business is profitable. It raked in $742 million in earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, or EBITDA. Uber's having a lot of success overseas, and their attempts to differentiate between high-end and low-end services are paying off big time. Second, while Uber Eats is still a money loser as they try to become the number one or number two player in all the markets, Khosrowshahi also said, we'll continue to follow the rides playbook, focusing on turning the dial toward healthy growth, market leadership, and margin expansion, significantly curtailing losses throughout the year. That's what we wanted. And some of these businesses are very profitable. We just wanted to get out of the ones that aren't. He added that this current quarter should be the period of peak investment for the Eats business. We always love to hear peak investment, meaning spending will soon go down. Basically, they're going to keep investing to compete in the markets where they think they can win. But it looks like they'll bail on markets where they're losing, which is exactly what I was pleading with when they reported before. Third and most important, Dara dropped a bombshell, telling us that Uber was targeting positive earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization by the fourth quarter of this year. Can you imagine the year-over-year contrast between they were losing money and maybe even making money? This could be incredible. How'd they get there? Better execution. As he said on the call, and I'm going to quote here, it's important to emphasize that we plan to achieve this profitability target assuming only modest improvements in the current competitive environment and without the assumption of any significant changes to our current portfolio of business, end quote. In other words, this isn't some pie-in-the-sky forecast. It's based on Uber's ability to help itself. He kept hammering home the point that Uber's not just pursuing growth. It's pursuing profitable growth. Listen to this. Quote, while we've already started demonstrating strong profitability improvements, we view 2020 as a truly transformational year, beyond which we believe we will emerge with stabilized gross bookings and revenue growth, continue to focus on leveraging our cost basis, and a positive EBITDA. End quote. Uber will no longer chase what he calls, quote, bookings that are essentially empty calories. I cheer, but I heard that, meaning unprofitable rides or deliveries. Then Dara rolled out what might have been considered mixed or even disappointing guidance if the company was still focused on growth at any cost, like you were supposed to last year at this time. The 2020 gross bookings and adjusted net revenue projections were both substantially weaker than expected. Now, I thought that was going to kill it. But after hearing him talk so much about profitable growth, Wall Street loved these numbers because the profitability figures were off the charts off of those sales. Uber's forecasting an EBITDA loss of $1.45 to $1.25 billion. Whoa, this year. Much better than the $1.72 billion, $1.72 billion loss the analysts were looking for. This is the tangible evidence that the company is sacrificing growth, you know, and those empty calories on the altar of profits. And that's exactly what this market wants to see. No wonder the stock rallied nearly 10% on an ugly tape on Friday. I thought it would go up again today. I think this may be a gift for you. Just listen to what Dara Khosrowshahi told our own Andrew Ross Sorkin in a fabulous interview on Squawk Box.
If you look at our plan for 2020, for every dollar of revenue growth, especially right from Q4 to Q4, we expect to drop 50 cents to 55 cents to the bottom line. We think that's absolutely doable to get to profitability by Q4, but at the same time make the kinds of investments that we want to make to keep a high growth rate for many years.
That's incredibly reassuring from, frankly, someone who is completely bankable, whom I respect a great deal. Of course, Uber's not perfect. They're in a constant war against local regulators who tend to favor the interests of local cab companies. We got Tony West, general counsel, in there fighting for you in those cases, though, and he's terrific. They didn't say much about Uber Freight, which I wanted to. That's their effort to rationalize the trucking industry. I think it's working. And I'm still worried about the delivery space where you have companies like Postmates and DoorDash that don't care if they lose money because they have deep-pocketed venture capital backers who operate off the same revenue growth at all-cost playbook that is so out of style. Witness Casper breaking 10 today. But at $40, this one is worth it. Remember, this thing came public last spring at 45, and it was a much worse company back then. The bottom line, after that phenomenal quarter, and it was phenomenal last Thursday, Uber's clearly gotten its act together. I'm betting this stock can sail past $45. It is no longer just a taxi service. And I think it can keep climbing as long as management can hit the profitability targets they laid out last week. And I believe in their ability to make the numbers, because in Dara, we trust. Roy in California. Roy.
Jimmy Chill.
It's oh, I'd be the
Roy
chill man.
From San Diego, California.
Mm-mm. What's
hey,
up?
Booyah to you. I want to wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you.
And it's also my mom's birthday, too, so I got to call right after.
Oh, well, that's nice. Happy birthday to her.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's Intern Call's birthday. It's Stephanie Link's birthday. This is a real great day. So it's Bob Iger's birthday. Okay.
Damn. All the real ones were born today.
All right.
So today, I wanted to ask you, one of my favorite secular trends to invest in is the proliferation of disruptive software and technology companies. You know, some of my biggest winners have been with companies like Shopify and Alteryx.
Oh, my God. Are those good companies?
Yeah, okay. We're obviously seeing the growth of e-commerce. We've also got the Internet of Things. We've got the 5G rollout, the growth of fintech. All these different sectors are pretty hot right now, right?
Right.
So with that being said, I feel like the importance of cybersecurity really should be at the top of every CEO's mind today, not only to protect their own company's data, but also their customers.
Okay.
And I know that cybersecurity, pretty competitive space.
Yes,
right?
It is, and we also have China out there making it demanding that we have it. Witness the Equifax. So, how can I help?
Exactly. So, we'd love to get your perspective today about CrowdStrike.
Best of breed. CrowdStrike is best of breed. CRWD. I say buy it. I think it's terrific. I really like it. That's a good one. Speaking of good ones, I like the stock of Uber, and let's not forget, Uber's gotten its act together. There is a big block, according to Bloomberg, that's out there of about 6 billion shares. Might be a great opportunity, okay? Now, I think it will hit its targets, and therefore the stock can keep climbing through its $45 price where it came public. Much more Mad Money, including how an announcement from Georgetown. The university has colored my view of fossil fuels. Then Bernie Sanders could be China's worst economic nightmare, although no one's thinking about that. I am. I'll explain. And Oil Calls rapid fire tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. I spent the past few days in Washington, D.C. at Georgetown University's Parents Weekend. And I've got some important news. I'm not talking about the Hoyas thrilling come-from-behind victory over the DePaul University Blue Demons on Saturday. Although that was a terrific contest. I'm talking about fossil fuels. Last Thursday, Georgetown's president announced that the university would be divesting from fossil fuel investments over the course of the next decade. You want to know why I think oil and gas stocks are bad long-term investments? Well, this is a huge part of it. Although, crucially, I wouldn't sell them exactly at this moment. Jeez, they just got crushed today. I expect the whole energy complex to get a major boost later this year, and that's when you should sell. More on that in a minute. Why unload the oil and gas stocks into strength later this year? Because it's not only Georgetown. Just the day before, the faculty at Harvard, my alma mater, voted overwhelmingly to demand that the university's endowment pull out of fossil fuels. These stories just keep coming up. It feels like the college investment movement is now turning to real groundswell. And once these things take off, they can have a life of their own. They can have a major impact. It's not only universities. Remember last month, BlackRock, one of the largest asset managers on Earth, very publicly embraced sustainability and said they'd make it a significant part of their investment decisions. Microsoft's going carbon negative by 2030. Remember when went out there and did that show? This stuff matters. watch people. Look, I know I upset a lot of people, particularly the oil and gas people, obviously, a week and a half ago, when I told Becky Quick that oil stocks were in the death knell phase, and that they reminded me of the tobacco stocks when they got uninvestable. But this is not about me, and it's not about you either. When you pick stocks, you need to game out where big money managers are going to put their capital. These days, more and more funds, including huge university endowments, are earmarking their money for ESG purposes. That's environment, sustainability, and corporate governance. That said, even though they're not investable, I do think the oils are, for the moment, and I don't like them, tradable. If it starts to look like President Trump's the prohibitive favorite at any point going into the election, the whole fossil fuel complex should give you a major bounce. Republicans love fossil fuels. You get a few polls that make it look like the GOP's poised to take back the House of Representatives, and I bet the energy sector could roar from these levels. So I'm not saying that this is the bottom. I am saying there could be a tradable rally. And that's why we're still hanging on to BP for my charitable trust, which you can follow along by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. Believe me, I don't want to own it, but I sense it can rally down big on it. With this red-hot economy giving President Trump a boost, I'm betting we'll have a better chance to sell than today with West Texas Intermediate crude breaking down below 50. So that's an important caveat. As I predicted, the oils have been hammered here, and anything can dead cat bounce, including these stocks. However, once these stocks do bounce, listen to me, you got to sell them. You got to sell them into strength. Because long term, I believe the whole fossil fuel complex is a lot of trouble and can't be owned. You simply cannot make good money owning them long term because it's very difficult for a fossil fuel company to go carbon neutral. I can't even imagine how many trees Exxon would have to go plant in order to become carbon neutral. Again, this is not political. It's about the mechanics of money management. Let me explain. Georgetown says they're going to cease new investments in fossil fuel companies and sell off their current holdings in fossil fuel stocks over the next 5 years. Georgetown is only the second major university to make this commitment, right behind the University of California system. Why does that matter? Because it's coming from the students. At Georgetown, they conducted a year-long review process in response to student pressure. Although I have to believe that the poor performance of energy stocks in recent years made this a much easier call. While Georgetown only has $1.8 billion endowment, roughly the 60th largest, they'd be on the bubble team in the March Madness endowments. The point is that students and faculty are pushing for the same thing pretty much everywhere. You're just seeing the manifestation right now in Georgetown. You know who's the number one seed of endowments? It's Harvard. Harvard, which had nearly $40 billion under management as of last year. Last week, Harvard's Faculty of Arts and Sciences voted in favor of divestment, 179-20. And the university president said it's under consideration. The faculty thinks that investing in fossil fuels makes them look bad. They're probably right. Kids these days take climate change very seriously. Alumni who donate money to Harvard take it seriously. The faculty doesn't control the portfolio, but they have a very loud voice. Even if you think climate change is a hoax, you got to admit that it's a successful hoax. A lot of people believe it, a real problem, especially for people at universities. That's why I expect more and more schools to get on board for divestiture bandwagon, and that's going to push these stocks down long term. For example, late last month, Penn announced they would no longer invest in the dirtiest types of energy, thermal coal or oil from tar sands. That's what Georgetown did 2 years before they decided to fully divest from fossil fuels. 6 months ago, the University of California system announced that it's divesting from fossil fuels, but they didn't do it to placate environmentalists. As their chief investment officer explained at the time, quote, "We believe hanging on to fossil fuel assets is a financial risk. That's why we will have made our $13.4 billion endowment fossil free as of the end of this month, and why our $70 billion pension plan will soon be that way as well," end quote. Hey, they have a point. Since the University of California made that investment, that announcement about investment in mid-September, the Energy Select SPDR, or SPIDER ETF, the XLE, is down 11%, while the S&P 500 is up 11%. The Dow's up 8, NASDAQ up 17. The group's a dog. It's been a dog for years. People realize the fleas ain't going away. The problem is very simple. The oil and gas industry is a victim of its own success. Thanks to the shale revolution, we're sitting on massive quantities of oil and gas here in the United States. There's a ton of capacity that's going unused because it's just not profitable with the price of oil under $50 a barrel. Every time the price ticks up, producers open the spigot, prices go right back down. And natural gas is even worse shape. Those prices are at the lowest level in 4 years. That's why the earnings in this group have been so disappointing. It's why oil service plays like Core Labs, that's a good company, have slashed their dividends. And I expect to see a ton of MLP and Nat Gas companies do the exact same thing in the near future. There will be many bankruptcies if Nat Gas doesn't rally. And we're almost out of the winter when the darn commodity spikes. Again, to sell right here, I don't know. Let it bounce. I think the oils will bounce hard because later this year, well, people can't resist those big yields, even if some are unsafe. When they rebound, that's when you got to bail. Who am I to make this call? Okay, listen. Back in 1983, when I was at Harvard Law, The school was heavily invested in companies that were doing lots of business in apartheid South Africa. I argued to the administration that it was just immoral to invest in South Africa. But not only that, it was also bad business, bad for our endowment. In the end, Harvard partially divested from South Africa, and the divestment movement put enormous pressure on the heinous apartheid regime to hold free elections. I'd like to think I played a role in that decision, but I don't think I was alone in recognizing these stocks as terrible investments worth selling anyway. We saw the same thing with big tobacco in the 90s when they became at-risk investments. I think we're now seeing it with fossil fuels. It's one thing to own oil companies when their stocks are going up, but when they're going down, it's easy to take a principled stand against pollution when the polluters are also wrecking your portfolio, which they will. The bottom line, among the growing divestment movement, the lousy fundamentals, and the possibility of some big regulatory hits down the road, it's too hard to invest in fossil fuels anymore. I'm betting you could have a good trade out of the group if President Trump's numbers keep ticking up. Once that happens, hey, you need to sell and sell into whatever strength you can get and be finished with this group as an investment class. They have money's back in for the break.
Happy birthday from everybody. Happy birthday to you.
All right. Well, it is. Yep, my birthday, and it is time. It's time for the lightning round. The best goes one of the sins of my and then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy, for a special Kramer birthday edition of the lightning round? Let's go to Doug in Nevada. Doug.
Hey, Jim, thanks for taking the call. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, Doug.
Bud to my portfolio. BUD, your thoughts?
You know, it actually is not bad. I mean, it's better than it used to be, and it's got, it gives you some good income. If you really do like the beer business, I suggest Constellation, if only just because I think it's making a big comeback. Let's go to David in Virginia. David.
Hi, Jim. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I was wondering what your opinion of MSA
is. I have liked this stock. I gave a speech for the Deal Economy 5 years ago. Said I can't help it. It was about 50 then. I can't believe some major company hasn't bought it. I stick by it. They make the best product there is. Let's go to UP in North Carolina. UP!
Hey, Jim. First of all, very, very happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you, UP. Thank you very much.
All right. So my, I have a question about Ollie's bargain outlet, the symbol Ollie.
Yes. There was an there's a very sad man, a sad death, Mr. Butler, who ran the company, and it's I just think he was in many ways the company. I know he wouldn't want me to say that, but I think in many ways he was the company, and I've not been recommending it since he passed. Let's go to Alex in California. Alex.
Hello. Booyah, and happy birthday, Jimmy.
Booyah. Oh, my. Wow, these well-wishers are too much. Thank you. What's up?
I'm curious of the recent purchase of a Habit. I want to know if it's a buy, a sell, or a hold for Yum Brands.
That was a very bad Pizza Hut quarter. The stock reversed badly after when I went over the conference call. I did not get encouraged at all that there's going to be a turn anytime soon. Let's go to Mark in California. Mark.
Happy birthday, booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Mark. Thank you.
Well, as I'm sure you know, here in California, the electric utility has been shutting off the power grids preemptively due to fire danger. It affects a lot of homes and businesses, often for days at a time.
Okay.
Now, I live in the mountains, so I bought an emergency backup generator from Generac. And after talking to the installer, I also bought the stock.
I think you're right to do that. I felt that I am, again, like you, in an area where the power goes out way too frequently, and debated doing it, getting a Generac myself. And all I hear when I do my work on it is that the demand because of the grid in this country is so poor is high. I wish you would fix the grid in the interim. In the interim, you buy that one. How about we go to Guy in New York? Guy.
Happy birthday, Dr. Kramer.
Well, thank you, Guy.
I got a question. I own both Raytheon and United Technology. I'd like to know how the reported merger of these two stocks is going to affect their individual share prices.
Well, you're going to end up owning a company that is combined, and it's great. I don't want you to, you know, this is one where you got to own it. You got to own it. You're going to get this combined institution, and it's going to be unbelievable, and I think it's going to be the best. Other than, candidly, I still like that combination of L3 and Harris. That's my fave. I need to go to Mike in Florida. Mike!
Jim Kramer.
Mike.
I got to start with happy birthday, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you.
Booyah.
Booyah.
I actually am interested in talking about BPE, Callon Petroleum.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one that makes me say that fossil fuels are no-go. That is exactly why. Callon, you can't touch it. I'm very sorry. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the lightning round.
Happy birthday from everybody. Happy birthday.
It's the wrong way. You have the numbers backwards. Who set this up?
From
now you're talking.
The lightning round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Hi, Jim. What's your program every day? I love it.
You are currently coaching three generations of my family.
Thank you for being the greatest in the world.
I'm here with my son, Jonathan, who's 9 years old and loves your show.
I love your show.
I love it when kids are involved.
Jim, thanks for everything you do for us.
I wanted to thank you for all the wonderful advice that you provide us.
We're going
to
get through this together. We're going to be constructive. We're not going to be pessimistic. We're going to be realistic. We believe in diversification, and the S&P Index Fund is still the best single diversification method ever invented.
Our world is a better place with you in it.
We thank you for all you do.
It's been a rough few weeks for China. There's the coronavirus outbreak. It's been a public health nightmare. It's been an economic catastrophe, too. The communist government is in crisis, and it's only going to get worse when New Hampshire holds its first-in-the-nation primary tomorrow. Why? Because the polls suggest that Bernie Sanders will win the Granite State tomorrow. And unlike 2016, when he had no chance of beating Hillary, this time the moderate side of the Democratic Party is fragmented, although, of course, Mayor Pete is doing better in the polls today. And when it comes to China, Bernie Sanders makes President Trump look like a dove. Yet we could be headed for an election where both major party nominees want to balance the scales with the People's Republic. Trump's tariffs brought the Chinese to the table for a phase one trade deal that opened the door for U.S. companies that want to compete fairly over there. If you read the 100-page agreement, you'll see many opportunities for businesses that could help balance our trade deficit. And so far, it's looking like the Chinese are sticking to the deal. But as hard as Trump's been on China, oh boy, Sanders is a lot more harsh, even though no one talks about it. This is a guy who's consistently opposed every trade agreement with China for years now. He knows the Chinese government has targeted many industries here, destroying millions of jobs. He makes a point of bringing it up constantly, as he sees that these deals were about selling out the American workers on the altar of the almighty dollar by our large industrial companies. Yet Bernie Sanders could be China's worst economic nightmare. It's not just trade either. You might expect a self-professed socialist. He says that's what he is, a self-professed socialist, to be soft on a communist regime. But if anything, he's a hardliner on China's human rights abuses, much harder than Trump. Listen to this, quote, China's engaged in a program of mass internment and cultural genocide against the Uyghurs, end quote. That's not what the PRC wants to hear, although it's true. He also wants to support the people of Hong Kong against the repressive Communist Party. Oh, boy, do they hate that. In other words, when it comes to trade with China, Bernie's more of a hardliner than Trump. And on human rights, he's much, much, much more aggressive. I know it seems odd when President Trump calls Xi Jinping a great friend, but he's been much tougher on China than his predecessors. If Sanders gets the Democratic nomination, then regardless of who wins the general election, the PRC could have a very rough time. China was really banking, I think, to some degree, on Joe Biden. They wanted his victory. It seemed natural. But after his poor performance in Iowa, that's looking increasingly unlikely. If Sanders picks up the nomination, bizarre as it sounds, the Chinese Communist Party may end up praying for a Trump victory come November. After the coronavirus debacle, it's getting harder to imagine President Xi surviving a Sanders administration. Who the heck could have foreseen that Trump would be the softy? Certainly not Xi. But after tomorrow, it might be self-evident. Stick with Kramer. China, all new American greed. She calls herself a financial mythbuster, but one woman's feeding investors financial fairy tales. But when suspicions rise, she conjures the supernatural to silence her investigators. Don't miss it. 10 o'clock on CNBC. I want to thank so many well-wishers today. Marie, thank you for these fabulous cookies. I've got to tell you, everyone weighed in. You know, my sister, my wife, of course, my kids. But you know what, Kramerica, when you guys weigh in, You just make me feel terrific about being this age. I got a lot more in store for you. I ain't going anywhere. All right, stay right here, because you don't want to miss a CNBC special report on the coronavirus outbreak. It's hosted by my friend Scott Wapner coming up next. These are great reports, guys. Like I said, there's always a bull market summer. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The CNBC report begins now.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.